Welcome, everybody, from all around the world. Welcome to this podcast, Escaping the Entanglements of Our Lives. You got yours, and I've got mine. I'm your host. I'm Dolphus Q. I am the originator and the creator of this podcast. Our lives, yours and mine, are easily entangled in things that are real, things that are imaginary, things that are malignant, things that are malign, things that can lift you up to the highest height or plunge you straight down to the bottom. These entanglements are life going. Some are necessary, some are completely useless to us, but each entanglement can control an aspect of our lives. But I maintain escape is possible. Yes, we can escape the entanglements of our lives. And it is as simple as the Buddha sitting under a yum tree. Yes, being mindful is critical to maintaining homeostasis in our lives. If you're following me, then you know what I'm doing. I'm escaping one of the major entanglements of my life. I am reading and writing my book before your very ears, and I'm having absolute fun doing it. I'm having absolutely fun doing it, and I encourage you to find a diversion, to find something different, or to simply do like Buddha and go sit under a yum yum tree. I don't know how long Buddha sat under that tree. But when he got up, he had enlightenment. He had achieved enlightenment. And the same, my friends, will follow with you. But now, as Walrus said, the time has come. Yes, my friends. The time has come for the reading of the Word. Episode 20, Chapter 20. One more thing to think about. I woke up cold, although I was curled up under my blanket. The sun wasn't high enough to see because of the high heels, but a pink glow of light above the heels was visible. I sat up and watched the pinkness of the sky. It seemed to brighten by degrees, as if what I watched was only a glow of what rose from below at the bottom of the heels. I was emotionally moved by the sight. I stood up and sought out a better view of the sunrise. Son Bolo rolled over on his back. "Hey, Joe, man, why you up so early?" I was surprised that he was awake. "The sunrise. I want to get a better view." Son Bolo stood up. "I'll walk with you. The sun maybe will warm us up. It gets cold as the North Pole at night around here." We found a footpath and followed it to an upper ledge that provided a spectacular view of the sun as it rose, but too bright to view without shaded or squinted eyes. The circumference of the sun edged above the horizon. It looked like the tip of a burning orb of fire, alive with rays of colors, red, white, and yellow. The sun's circumference steadily grew until the whole orb cleared the horizon. Wow, I can feel the heat. Sunbolo spread his arms wide apart like he was nailed to a cross. Man, ain't it beautiful? When we got back to where we slept, we found Pete and his companion still asleep. Sunbolo tapped on the wonder of the camper. Pete lifted his head and slid open the window. His eyes looked red. Good morning, gentlemen. Kind of early, ain't it? Yeah, answered Sunbolo, but it's the right time to hit the road. Otherwise, we won't reach El Paso before the sun goes down. All right, just give me a minute, said Pete, then added, you think we got time to drink a cup of coffee before we leave? Oh, the Indian woman brewed a cup of coffee. Everyone except Fred drank coffee. We sat inside the camper. Fred remained inside the truck cab with the doors locked. Sunbolo told Pete that if he reached El Paso before the food stamps office closed, that he and his wife could receive food stamps today. A brightness cleared the redness from Pete's eyes. Is that right? What about Fred? Can he receive food stamps too? Sunbolo nodded his head and smiled. Yep, if he has an ID. Pete grinned and finished the last of his coffee. Well, come on, let's ride. Pete, the Indian woman, and Sunbolo left me in the camper. I heard the engine crank. It ran like the intention was to warm up the engine. Sooner than I expected, Fred came into the camper and slammed the door behind him. The truck shifted into gear, and soon we were back on I-10, speeding towards El Paso. Why is that fool driving so fast? To needle Fred, I told him perhaps Pete wanted to reach the food stamp office in El Paso before it closed. Fred looked confused for a moment. So now it's food stamps, he replied. Fred didn't like it and wasted no time to accuse the Indian woman for Pete's sudden interest in food stamps. I fought to listen passively as he continued to spill his guts. Finally, without a warning, I dashed to the door of the camper and jerked it open and held my head out like I had to puke up the contents of my stomach. When I turned refreshed from the rush of fresh air, I closed the door. I explained to a shocked Fred with a confused look on his face that I was suddenly overcome by an urge to puke. I guess the coffee I drank was bad. I bet that Indian bitch brewed it, replied Fred. I offered no reply as I unrolled my gear and stretched out on the floor and closed my eyes like I was asleep. I guess my stunt shut Fred's mouth. I heard nothing further from him until he said out loud, oh shit. Here comes trouble. I got up and peered through the window. I saw a red light that flashed on and off. It was about a quarter mile behind us, but steadily gained ground. Soon I saw the light rested on the roof of a highway patrol car. Then, as if I needed further proof, a siren began to wail. The truck pulled over to the shoulder of I-10 and came to a stop. The patrol car pulled up behind the truck and stopped too. But the red light continued to flash. The officer lifted a handheld mic to his mouth. When he set the mic down, he placed a cowboy hat on his head and got out of the car. He paused and peered at the rear of the camper like something was odd. I could feel his cold stare and quickly turned away from the window and looked at Fred.
I see what you mean about trouble.
The officer continued to walk past the camper and to the door of the cab. I could not see what was happening, but I was able to hear the exchange and learned it was Pete who drove the truck. Good morning, officer, I heard Pete say, then laugh. Don't tell me this old truck was speeding. I thought she was barely keeping up. The officer grinned. An old Chevy truck, right? Yep, and she still got a motor. The officer explained that the truck had not exceeded the speed limit and that he had stopped the truck because of suspicious activity. Sir, I'd like to see your driver's license and the registration to your vehicle. Sure, answered Pete. But what suspicious activity did you see? Well, about 5 miles back, I noticed the door of your camper suddenly open and trash flew back onto the highway. Just as suddenly, the door closed. You know, I can write a ticket and fine you for that offense. You got anyone back there? Just a couple of guys. I'm giving a ride to El Paso. Well, tell them to keep the door of the camper closed while you drive. The officer took the registration for the truck and the driver's license to his car and tapped on the keyboard of a computer. Everything must have checked out okay because Pete pulled back over onto I-10. The truck stopped twice after that incident for fuel both times before we reached El Paso. El Paso looked like Mexico to me, judging from all the Mexicans I saw. Sambolo said that was because Juarez and El Paso were once two cities in Mexico separated by a bridge. We walked the street like sightseers. Sambolo and Pete spoke in hushed tones. Sambolo spoke in Spanish to a few Mexicans. I believe he sought the location of the food stamp office. My thoughts concerned the location of the yard. I shared that concern with Sambolo. He didn't respond as I would like. Man, F that yard, he snapped. Right now, I want to find the address to the food stamp office. Suddenly, Pete's mouth opened and he snapped his fingers. He grinned. I know where we can find all the information we need. He drove the truck to a police station. When we left the police station, he had pages of information, including the address since he sought. However, the food stamp office had closed when we reached it. Sambolo directed him to the Sally, not far from a railroad crossing. Pete looked disappointed when Sambolo informed him that we would continue on by freight train as we had planned. Pete asked about the food stamps. You got the address, said Sambolo. You know how to get there. Just do as I told you, and I guarantee you'll leave that office with emergency food stamps. Fred tried to hide his delight as we left the trio at the Sally. We walked towards the railroad crossing. I felt like I was headed home after a long, hard-fought battle through the jaws of hell. I told Sambolo of my gladness to see those railroad tracks. Man, I could kneel down and kiss those rails. Sambolo laughed. He told me he had felt like that many times. But the moment I saw those tracks, I saw freedom. I thought we were headed to the yard, but Sunbolo soon left the tracks. He knew his way around like a fast-talking cab driver. He wanted to visit Juarez and check on some old friends. The yard could wait until tomorrow. Plus, he could pick up some food stamps. We stopped at a liquor store. He had enough money to buy a cheap fifth of wine. We walked to a park and sat on a secluded bench. Sunbolo untwisted the cap on the bottle and made libations. He spilled a few drops of wine on the ground in memory of the wine drinkers who no longer lived to partake in the ritual. He took a swallow from the bottle and offered the bottle to me. He warned, no backwash. I declined the wine with a wave of my hand. Sunbolo smiled slightly as he took another swallow, then another one, which must have made him very reflective. He told me that once in an inopportune moment in this very park, he had robbed a man. It had occurred after midnight. He had discovered a drunk Mexican asleep on a bench, and as he went through the man's pockets, the man had woke up but was too drunk to fight him off. He took a long swallow and reflected some more. I can tell you something else, he said. You ever heard of the L.A. Slasher? I told him I had not. He proceeded to tell me of a man in L.A. who slashed the throats of prostitutes, mostly strawberries. He explained that a strawberry was a woman addicted to crack and was willing to engage in oral sex for it. The L.A. Snatcher would give the woman a $10 piece of crack. And as the woman began the oral act on the L.A. Slasher, he would suddenly pull out a bowie knife and slash the woman's throat. Sunbolo grinned at the ghastly sight like he saw humor in it. I saw a horrible image that dripped with blood. I cupped a hand over my throat like I sought to protect it from the slasher's blade. Oh my God, I said with fright. Don't tell me you know the L.A. Slasher. Sunbolo cut his grin short. Now you know him too. I snatched my head from my throat. You are the L.A. Slasher. Sunbolo took a swallow of wine and then laughed. I bet you wondering why I told you that, aren't you? I nodded and said yes, very softly. I couldn't speak above a whisper. I wanted to give you something to think about. He offered the wine bottle to me again. I didn't really want a drink, but I was afraid to say no. I took a fast swallow without backwash and handed the bottle back to him. He took a fast swallow and continued. A couple of summers ago, he started, I rode freight trains with a white boy who spent money like he had it to burn. Whenever he ran out, he'd call his lawyer and the lawyer would wire him some more money. All we did that summer was ride freight trains, sleep in motels, get high, and hook up with prostitutes. I thought he was a rich white kid running wild. I would ask him about his parents, and often I thought of contacting them to offer information, for cash, of course. But my occasional inquiry about his parents must have struck a chord of disharmony. His parents weren't wealthy, and not worried about him. He wasn't rich. The money he spent came from an insurance policy. His wife had died in an accident. Joe, I was touched, reflected Sunbolo. I really liked it, him. I still remember my reply. Wow, man. Kid, I'm so sorry to hear that. Don't be, he said. I'm not. I'm the one who killed her. Then he told me the whole story of how he had killed his wife and made it look like an accident. I didn't give a shit, but I wondered why had he told me. When I asked him, you know what he told me? To give you something to think about. When Sanbolo swallowed the last of the wine, he had changed his mind about everything. He was suddenly ready to get the hell out of El Paso. We scrapped on our gear and started to walk. He knew exactly where the yard was. Freight trains stood on the tracks like each one was ready to leave. But everywhere I looked, it seemed I saw security guards standing watch. Sanbolo said they were border patrol and looked for Mexicans trying to catch out. We had to sneak into the yard. I waited in the shadows while Sanbolo saw the clear path. He would return and guide me to a safe spot, then leave again. It took time, but soon he led me to a boxcar. The door was cracked open. We had to push, but we got it open far enough to squeeze inside the boxcar. It was dark and smelly, and the floor was scattered with straw. Sanbolo slid the door back to a crack. He struck a match. The flame revealed that livestock had occupied the car and left behind plenty of evidence. I gathered clean straw and waited in the darkness. Finally, I heard the release of the air brakes and the freight trains began to move. Slowly at first, but steadily, it picked up speed. And thus, we have reached the end of this episode. And I invite you again, people from all around the world, to join us next time for escaping the entanglements of our lives. This is Dolphus Q saying so long, everybody.